Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks superfan, here to start us off as we recap all the games from a crazy, crazy Sunday. Man, big games. Don't know if you saw the finish to the Chiefs-Broncos game. Man, what a great game that was. We'll be definitely talking about that. We'll be talking about the Texans game. We will be talking about the Seahawks game. I've got some opinions about that. I want to thank Sam for helping chipping in with the hosting alongside James while Nick is enjoying most of the night off, but we did put him to work a little bit. So let's get right into it. Before we do, though, let's talk about our sponsor real quick, BetDSI. By now you know our promo code FANUP10. That'll get you a free $10 on your first deposit. You also get a 100% bonus. They're fast, safe, easy to use. You can bet on all sorts of stuff like football, which we love, some other sports. Apparently the local soccer team, the Sounders, is going to some kind of championship thingy. So you can probably bet on that. Again, that's promo code FANUP10. And with that, let's get right to the recaps. All right, I'm here with Nick, the Chiefs superfan. Nick, this game.
This game, indeed.
Man, what a finish. What a game. What happened?
This game was actually so long and so tense for like the last bit. I the first quarter seems like it was a year ago. We're recording this right after the winning field goal doinked off of the upright, but still somehow went in as time expired in overtime as the Chiefs won 30-27. The first half of this was an absolute defensive struggle, and generally that means a boring game, but it certainly wasn't when it came to this one. I mean, Justin Houston, he is just back. He had three sacks in the first half, including one for a forced fumble and a safety. By the way, that safety and the kickoff return for a touchdown that followed it, actually it wasn't a kickoff return, I guess the punt, you know, the post-safety punt for a touchdown, was the Chiefs' only points and really only seeming like forward, production for the first probably three quarters almost. The offense had 50 total yards in the first half, but basically that one big play by Justin Houston was a 9-point swing. It was the first 9 points in the game. And then suddenly at the end, there was just a burst of offensive activity. Our cornerback, Philip Gaines, got picked on quite a bit by Emmanuel Sanders. I think he allowed over 200 yards of receptions, although he had a couple good passes defense. He was getting picked on by Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian looked really good in this. Meanwhile, Alex Smith, I think he's continued his stretch of really fairly lackluster performances, granted against a very good defense without his favorite weapon in Jeremy Maclin. And him, he was also really being torched by the pass rush. Both of these pass rushes got home. There were big hits all over the place. And this game ended up going to overtime 24-24 after the Chiefs really had, I think, about a minute to somehow come back in this game, needing a touchdown and a 2-point conversion, which Alex Smith did rise to the occasion and give them at the end of regulation to take them to overtime. Broncos got the ball to start off overtime, marched down, got themselves a field goal. The Chiefs responded with a field goal of their own. And so then on the ensuing Denver possession, they were able to move the ball. They got just past midfield. And then it came this really difficult decision that the Denver coaches had to deal with, which is, do you try for a 62-yard field goal and, you know, risk missing it and giving your opponent really great field position? But if you get it, it's for the win, because there was about 2 minutes left in overtime at that point, somewhere around there. Or do you try to punt it? I mean, what do you do in that situation when you're tied up in overtime? So they decided to go for it, and we know what happened after that. They miss it. The Chiefs get the ball on the Denver 48-yard line. We're able to drive down to, I think, about the 12 and kicked it. And despite the fact it was a short kick, it was like 34 yards, Cairo Santos somehow hit just on the inside of that upright and bounced it in. It looked like it had been missed, but it just barely got in, went behind the other uprights. Therefore, it was for the win. And so therefore, the Chiefs move up to second in the AFC West, just behind the Raiders, with now a game over all of their AFC West rivals, which meaning no one's going to sweep them. And this is a really important game for them.
Yeah, that kick could not have hit that upright any harder. That thing, it didn't just like graze it. It slammed into it. And I was sure it was bouncing out. When I saw the replay angle where you could see it going behind the other upright, I was shocked. I mean, there is not a less amount you could have won a football game by. This was overtime. This was a field goal as time expired that hit the upright and by about a foot was inside that other upright. Still counts as a W, though. Still goes in the win column. That's absolutely tremendous. Let's talk a little bit about Denver, too, though. You mentioned how Justin Houston was a one-man wrecking crew. Von Miller also had 3 sacks this game. Man, what a beast. What was Von Miller doing all day to the Chiefs' offensive line?
Well, and I think actually both he and Justin Houston were just taking over this game at certain stretches. I mean, both actually, in addition to their numerous sacks, they're making a lot of stuffs. They were getting into coverage, batting passes. It was nuts. But Von Miller in particular, I mean, he deserves to be the highest paid player in the league. I mean, I think it's a healthy Justin Houston. I mean, I would make the argument is right up there with him. So far, we haven't seen a guy take over games like him, other than J.J. Watt. And he was beating our best tackle, our best offensive lineman, Mitchell Schwartz, who we signed this past offseason, who's been very good. But he was beating Mitchell Schwartz one-on-one. He was, whenever we would try to chip him with guys. I mean, he was just unstoppable. And even when he wasn't making the player getting the sack, he was creating enough disruption that it was forcing Alex Smith into the arms of some of his compadres there on the line. There was nothing the Chiefs could really do. I mean, he was a big reason why they were just so anemic on offense because, I mean, even on – he was getting sacks on quick screen passes. I mean, it was just – there was nothing you could do to that guy on some of those snaps. So definitely a great outing by him. And the Denver defense, the secondary continued to play well. And I think, I think both of these defenses are similar in that they know that once they've forced you to be at least somewhat one-dimensional, then they have you right where they want you. And that's why it was just, I mean, we saw a lot of zero blitzes. I mean, a lot of the big plays were just because both sides were bringing the house, one side or the other. So really crazy game.
Speaking of craziness, so I think I know football pretty well, not just the Seahawks. I pay a lot of attention, obviously. Like you, I talk to all the other super fans. Who the hell is Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, he's really come out of nowhere. I've talked about him a couple of times on the show, in that he is the guy who is our most controversial addition on the off season. Being as he did last year plead guilty to assaulting his pregnant girlfriend. And he was kicked out of, I can't remember which school he was in, but either way, he's bounced around. He's running like a 4.25, and he seems even faster than that. And so the Chiefs brought him on as a project, threw a fifth-round pick on him. And I think probably he was just totally off everybody else's draft boards, given his off-the-field concerns. And he's been the star of training camp, OTAs, everything. And the biggest thing with him and the biggest surprise with him was not that just his speed. It's the fact that he's actually a very natural receiver. He can catch with his hands. And he's quickly become, I mean, with Mack going out, he probably is the Chiefs' best wide receiver. It's just, it's been insane. In this game, he was the first rookie to score a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a kick return touchdown since 1965 with Gale Sayers. So, I mean, this guy is a phenom, and this isn't the first great game he's had. So he's definitely got to watch. I'm glad I tucked him away as a sleeper on my fantasy team, and everyone else should try to get him as well.
Yeah, and let's make sure we point out that his receiving touchdown, that was the one near the end of regulation that allowed them the opportunity to go for two and tie this game and send it to overtime. The Chiefs do not win this game without Tyreek Hill. So You know, I'd say if we have two certainties with him. He was a necessary component for this win, and he's probably not going to win the Walter Payton Man of the Year award.
Definitely both true.
All right, so any final thoughts? Huge, huge win. Probably the biggest one of the year, Nick.
Probably so far. I think it was very similar to our win in Oakland. I mean, both of those were extremely necessary. This one was a bit more surprising to me, but I felt like the Chiefs, at the time when they made that win on the road in Oakland, they were at 2-2 with something to prove. They're coming off their bye. And, you know, despite the fact that Oakland's very good this year, I felt like they could take it. This was sort of the opposite. I mean, the Chiefs have been sort of sputtering lately, and Denver was coming off of their bye, playing at home, and Denver's already dropped a game to every other team in the AFC West except for the Chiefs. Either way, they've dropped a couple of games in the division, and given how competitive this division is going to be, this was really a must-win for them in order for them to be in the best possible position to win the division. And so I think they actually needed a little bit more than the Chiefs did, and the Chiefs came away with it. That's huge for the team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a worse position to be in than having beaten both of your top division rivals at their place heading into the final stretch of the season. Well, Nick, I'm sure you're going to knock back a couple more celebratory drinks and relax. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
And I want to thank you for making our loss to the Bucks last week seem less bad.
All right, I'm just going to edit that out. All right, good night, Nick.
Good night.
All right, we're now joined by Tim, the Atlanta Falcons superfan, doubling up the Arizona Cardinals 38-19. Tim, you know, Arizona may have been struggling, but that's still got to be a good win for you.
I mean, Arizona's been struggling, but this is absolutely a good win. This is a statement win for this team. The defense gave up 19 points to the Cardinals. Like, the Cardinals have a good offense. David Johnson is ridiculous. Larry Fitzgerald's amazing. Carson Palmer's been, you know, kind of bad this year, but, you know, on the whole, this is against a really good defense. And I mean, going into the game, what, 3 hours before the game, we find out that the Falcons have lost Desmond Trufant for the year. What? So, you know, if we're only going to give up 19 points to a good Cardinals team, then, you know, I'm on board.
Yeah, that's definitely devastating news for Desmond Trufant. You know, as much as we like to give you a hard time on your Desmond Trufant love, he really is one of the best cornerbacks in the league.
Yeah, so, you know, Jalen Collins did a good job stepping up today, and Robert Alford had a great game. Didn't get called for pass interference, which is surprising. Typically, he's called for one, like, really, really bad pass interference, you know, per game. So, all in all, really, really happy with the Falcons. A little disappointed with how many yards David Johnson was able to get on us. But again, you know, he's one of the best in the league. And, you know, really, hats off to Vic Beasley. He had 8 quarterback pressures today. Didn't get a sack, but, you know, if you can get there and you can start disrupting things, then, you know, you don't really have to get the quarterback down if you can, you know, hit him and just get in his head. So all in all, a really good Falcons win. Really proud of Taylor Gabriel too. Man, thanks to the Cleveland Browns for just dropping who probably would be their best player right now, because he's been phenomenal. I want to say he's got like 4 touchdowns with us already, 2 again today. Both of them over 25 yards, and both of them on, you know, similar plays where the first one was like a bubble screen. The second one was just, you know, your standard wide receiver screen, and he just does what he does best and get in between some tacklers and take it to the house. So, you know, really, really big statement, fun win. You know, I'd like to see Seattle end up winning today because they're playing Tampa Bay, but, you know, as of right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So, you know, these are the types of games that you need to win, but the Falcons have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. We've got the Chiefs at home next week, followed by at the Rams, Niners in Atlanta, at the Panthers, and the Saints at home to finish out the year. So we only need to win 2, maybe 3 of those final 5. Realistically, I could see us winning, you know, 4, if not all 5 of them. You know, the Chiefs are the only game that I'm, you know, a little bit concerned about in that matchup or in those matchups. So, you know, on the whole, really, really happy with my team today.
Well, excellent. It sounds like you guys are pretty well poised for a playoff run. And yeah, you know, Gabriel is an amazing story, especially when you look at the Cardinals were able to pretty much shut down Julio Jones. I think he only had, what, about 4 catches today? And
he had 4 catches.
Really quiet day.
I mean, on the whole, quiet day, but he was beating Patrick Peterson a lot. And Peterson had a couple, really bad pass interference calls against him that ended up giving us first downs, including one in the end zone, which gave us the ball on the one. So, yeah, on the stat sheet, Julio wasn't showing up, but, you know, I've said it all year long. Those are the games that I want to see, are the games where Julio's not really showing up on the stat sheet, because that means he's doing all the other things, you know, blocking, being out there, being a decoy, and allowing Matt Ryan to, again, eight different receivers with a catch today. So if my other boyfriend, Patrick DeMarco, would have been able to haul in his one target, we'd be looking at nine different receivers catching the ball. That's impressive. So, you know, I'm really, really happy with the team today.
Well, and I mean, as far as the Arizona side goes, I mean, this has to be the, you know, the final nail in the coffin for the season, right? Like, they're not in any spot to go get a wild card. Even with Seattle struggling today, I don't really see them being able to catch up to Seattle in the division. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. They're, what, two games out of the wild card now, you know, where we're looking at what Washington has the last wild card spot at 6-4-1. So, you know, I really can't see Arizona being able to claw their way back into this. You know, it looks like it's going to be over for them. But, I mean, we've seen crazier things, but I don't expect to see it this year. They'd have to go on a tear, and I don't think they'd be able to lose another game the rest of the way. So, you know, really disappointing for the Arizona, you know, fans, and makes sense for why our super fan didn't want to show up. So, yeah, I mean, that's tough, because there were so many teams that, or so many, you know, people in the media thought that they were going to be in the Super Bowl this year against New England. So, you know, now, I mean, the NFC is wide open. You know, I know the Cowboys are 10-1 and they look like they're going to be able to run away with this thing, but you got to remember they have two rookies at the helm. And, you know, once it gets into the playoffs, it's a completely, completely different ball game. So, you know, I'm excited for it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for hopping on, Tim. Again, congratulations on the win, and, you know, good luck going forward.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
All right, now we are joined by Chicago superfan Tom, coming off a close loss, nearly a comeback win, though, 27-21 at the hands of the Tennessee Titans. Tom, I'm not going to lie, really was pulling for the Bears there at the end. I don't want the Titans to rack up these wins and challenge the Texans for the battle of the or for the king of the heap in the AFC South.
Yeah, sorry about that. I guess we kind of let you down there. It was. It did turn out to be a fairly exciting game. If you had just watched the first half, you would have never guessed it, because the Titans came out a little bit flat. You know, the first offensive series wasn't anything to brag about, but really, you know, they came out and ran the ball really well, as is their habit, and that set up the play action pass. And Marcus Mariota was on. He had a very good game. Threw some nice deep balls. Frankly, their made the receiving group look really good. You know, those are pretty average receivers on that team, but you know, the Bears defensive backs were worried enough about the run to where, you know, those receivers were running by them like they were traffic cones, and lots of open guys. I believe it was 21-7 at half, and the Titans looked like you know, they were going to really take it to them. The second half was a little bit different. I think they may have throttled down a little bit, and the Bears did a much better job of stopping the run. And then they started to come back, and Matt Barkley got a little bit hot. You know, this was his first start for the Bears, and we didn't know what to expect from him. He was a little bit up and down, but I'd say that second half was mostly up. You know, the whole stadium knew that they were going to have to throw the ball, and Barkley, to his credit, you know, dropped back, hit the back of his drop, and got rid of the ball pretty quickly, and really kept the Titans from getting to him. And there were, you know, more than a couple throws where he was looking down the barrel of the gun and knew he was going to get hit and threw a strike, you know. So he had a rough first half, threw a couple of really dumb interceptions. One was a real back breaker right in the end zone, but really let him back. Frankly, I think the Bears might have won this game if their receivers had just caught more balls. They had an awful lot of drops in this game. They had eight big drops that I counted. There were more than that. And I mean big drops, like drop touchdowns, you know, drop first downs, dropped, you know, everywhere. It was really a terrible performance by the receivers. They made a number of other mistakes. Again, in the first half, I thought they were pretty much outclassed talent-wise, but they managed to come back. They hung in there. The defense hung in there, and they made a game of it at the end. As a Bears fan, you're not terribly unhappy by this result. It's yet another step toward a top draft pick. And maybe you think you saw some improvement in some of the young guys. At bare minimum, you saw them show some guts, and they really hung in there and managed to come back in a game that, you know, frankly, as a fan, I thought was pretty much hopeless at halftime. So give them credit where credit's due. I thought it was turned out to be a real good game, and sorry we couldn't win it for you, but important game for the Titans to win. They pulled it out at the end. Important game for the Bears just in terms of their own development.
Okay. Now, two quick questions to follow up there. You mentioned how Matt Barkley played, you know, outside of that back-breaking pick there, he played competently. Clearly, it's kind of the open secret that Chicago is moving on from Jay Cutler at the end of this year. You know, did you like what you see out of Matt Barkley, or are you still saying, you know, he's just a stopgap to get us through this season and to ensure a high pick, and then we'll get our quarterback of the future through the draft or some other means?
I did like what I saw from Matt Barkley. Boy, you know, he made some really dumb decisions. I mean, I won't hide it. There were a couple, but you know, the end of that game, he threw some strikes. He threw some real good balls. The big problem with Barkley, and, you know, I really, he's physically limited. Frankly, he's not got a very good arm. And he really has to make all the right throws and all the right decisions and be on to be an effective NFL quarterback. I don't know if the Bears are going to settle for that. I personally like what I saw, and boy, you know, I'd be a very happy fan to think that a guy like that was a backup with another year or you know, with a little bit. Well, he's really got some seasoning. He's a veteran now, but you know, I think that for his first start, he did reasonably well. You know, you take those bad decisions out, and I thought he did fine. And I don't see, you know, I don't see that being a constant thing. I really thought that he looked good in the second half. I don't see him as a starting quarterback. I could be wrong. I mean, you know, hey, Joe Montana's arm was, you know, wasn't all that great either. And it may depend on what the coaching staff thinks and feels about him, you know, and what the front office does. But my gut feeling is that they're gonna look for another starter, and they're gonna look for a young quarterback of the future, and Barkley's gonna be stuck in between as maybe a backup or something like that if he sticks. But it's still early, you know. The odds are good. He's gonna have some games to show what he can do. I know they say Jay Cutler's not out for the season, but my impression was that injury was pretty severe, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was more than 1 week. So, you know, we may get another look at him. We'll see what turns up.
All right. Well, thank you very much for giving us that recap there, Tom. Good luck for the rest of the season, whatever luck you want that to, or however you want that luck to take form, whether it's in a couple more losses or just some competitive games.
I'll take what comes.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, back talking about the Patriots versus the New York Jets, a game which, if you guys haven't realized, tends to actually always be good games. These games are pretty much always decided by 7 or less. Today was no different. It was a really good game, honestly. It really went down to the last possession. A few things to kind of watch in this game. Tom Brady was hobbled by a knee injury. I know he got tagged in the knee a couple weeks ago versus the Seahawks, but he wasn't on the injury report last year from what I recall. Anything outside of normal, but going into this week, he was a little bit iffy, and it did seem to affect him. You know, he was still efficient. You know, he was 30 for 50, So, you know, about 60%, you know, no interceptions. But he wasn't really pushing the ball downfield, only threw for 286 yards, which is a pretty low total for him. Obviously, the fact that he lost Rob Gronkowski to a back injury early in the game contributes to it. And I'll be honest, I'm worried about Gronk. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that he could be the best tight end of all time. However, I also don't think it's unreasonable to worry about the injuries and the physical way he plays the game. I mean, when he came out of school, that was the big knock on him, was that, you know, he had some back injuries then, and he's missed plenty of time since. I worry he may have a Megatron-like career, where the injuries do take their toll and he retires maybe before we're ready, as opposed to like a Tony Gonzalez career, where he is incredibly effective deep into his twilight, which would be really cool to see. The Jets came out to play. Ryan Fitzpatrick played a really good game. You know, he pretty much matched Brady stride for stride. Had almost as many yards on, actually quite a bit fewer attempts. He had no running game to speak of. Quincy Inunua, which is a player that I like coming in this year, had a really good game. Made a great catch in the end zone that was initially called an incompletion, but then was turned over. After a replay review, Brandon Marshall had his first touchdown in what seems like forever as well. So this was a really back-and-forth game. For the most part, though, you know, when it came time to make a play and when it came time to make a mistake, things went pretty predictable. The New England Patriots were able to cause a couple of fumbles. Most important, there was one at the end of the game where the Patriots had just scored but did not make the two-point conversion. So it's a five-point game. Jets have the ball, and they're starting to move it, and then it gets knocked out of the hands of Ryan Fitzpatrick, recovered by the Patriots. Game over. That's huge. So, you know, the turnover differential, you know, was two in the Patriots' favor, and, I mean, I don't care who you are. This is not a team that you're going to beat with that kind of turnover differential. I mean, really, there's not a lot of teams in the NFL you're going to beat with that kind of turnover differential. So that's a really, really big thing. I'm concerned about the New England defense overall, though. I have been for several weeks. These New York Jets have no business scoring 17 points on anybody right now. I think that they could use a pass rusher and maybe a good linebacker right about now. So well, that'll be something to keep an eye on as we near the playoffs. But at least for now, the Patriots at 9-2 are sitting pretty. They've got some fierce competition from Oakland for that number one seed. But at the moment, they've pretty clearly got the AFC East completely locked up.
Hey, we were finally able to get both super fans for a game on in one showing, or in one recap, I guess. We're joined here by Don, the Baltimore Ravens super fan. How are you today, Don?
Yep, doing all right. Just got back from the game, so you know, wonderful day for the Ravens fans out there.
And we also have Scott, the Cincinnati Bengals fan. How are you today, Scott?
Doing just fine. Just feel like I've lost three more hours of my life watching the Bengals.
Well, on that depressing note, we will. I'll point out that the final score was 19-14. Don, you know, what are your first thoughts from the game?
I mean, for the Ravens, you know, we got a couple of turnovers, which is good. I mean, the offense still seems like it's very stagnant. I mean, Flacco had the early pick, you know, on the tip pass. The running game had, you know, we had a couple good runs with Kenneth Dixon and Terrence West, but just very, very stagnant overall. Yeah, thankfully the defense bailed us out. You know, Suggs had two sacks. Doomerville had the big sack with the forced fumble towards the end of the game to help secure the win. You know, so we maintain, you know, first place in the division. I'm not confident that we're going to hold that. But I mean, you know, win's a win, especially at, you know, in the division at home. Definitely a, you know, much needed win. I'll give props to Cincinnati though. I mean, no Gio Bernard, no AJ Green. They held their own. You know, Eifert had a good game. You know, they're passing around a lot, but had a good effort. But yeah, just came out a little bit short.
Now, Scott, speaking of just a little bit short, you guys had a chance to tie it on that final drive there. We were talking a little bit before we started recording here about your thoughts on if they would have just kicked the PAT or gone Jack Del Rio style and tried to win it outright. What were your thoughts on that?
That would have been interesting. I think every Bengals fan would have been rooting for going for two Mike Nugent missed another PAT in that game, which ended up being pretty key. You know, when you talk about at the end of the game, that a touchdown would have then won it. But that was his third PAT missed in a row. It's his fourth in the last seven games. They've brought in kickers and taken a look at him, but said that they want to stick with Nugent. So it would have been interesting to see if they would have ran him out there with the tie on the line and try to tie it, or if they would have just gone for two. I certainly would have elected to go for two. I mean, at this point, at 3-6-1, what else would you have had to lose? I mean, the only way to get back in it would have been to beat the Ravens. So, knowing Marvin Lewis, I would guess he probably would have gone for the PAT, but I think all of the fans would have been rooting for going for two.
All right. So we've both kind of, or both of you have kind of alluded to the current standings. It's kind of the tale of teams going in the wrong or in opposite directions. Baltimore maintaining the top of the division. Cincinnati just slowly losing ground to both Baltimore and the Steelers. Scott, we'll start with you. I mean, did this kind of end the Bengals season here, or do they still have an outside shot?
You know, mathematically, no. I mean, they still have a shot. They still got a game left against Baltimore and a game left against Pittsburgh, both games at home. So mathematically, no. I think you'd be lying to yourself if you watch this team and think they have a possibility of winning the last five, because that's essentially what they would have to do to have any chance of winning the division. They haven't won in over 30 days. I can't imagine seeing them win five in the next 5 weeks. But, it's just – it's kind of the same stuff each week. It's something small, whether it be coaching, it just builds up. And, this week it was, they take a timeout on a play that, it didn't appear that the Bengals had gotten the first down, but the refs gave them the first down, and inexplicably the Bengals take a timeout, allow the Ravens more time to review the play.
Yep.
It gets overturned and they kick a punt. It's the decision by Marvin Lewis at the end of the half to not take the holding penalty and allow Tucker to kick a 57-yarder. I mean, anyone that's ever watched Justin Tucker kick knows that 57 yards is certainly within his realm of possibility, how 67 might have been. But, you have to take that. You have to take that penalty. Against any other kicker, maybe you don't. Certainly against Mike Nugent, you wouldn't. But against Tucker, you have to take that penalty, and he didn't. And Tucker makes it. They go to the halftime up 13-3. So, they had two red zone turnovers today, a botched snap and then a strip sack, that all played into what ended up being a close game. So, it's just that every game they have, two to three just, head-scratching plays, either by, either news by the coaches or just plays by the players, that just really come back and bite them. And this is a team that does not have any – they don't have any leeway. They can't afford these one or two errors. And, that was the case today. Those couple errors cost them in, what we thought would be a low-scoring, ugly offensive game it was. And, they made more mistakes than the Ravens, and that's what left them on the short end.
All right, Don, and how about you? You think the Ravens are going to be able to hold on to first place in the division there?
Well, I think so for a little bit. I mean, eventually, they're going to be at Pittsburgh on Christmas Day, one of the two Christmas Day games. So that's obviously, I think that could be a very challenging / rough game. We have Miami at home next week, which seems like a decent chance for us to win. I mean, like I said last week, I think 9-7, wins the division, and whoever wins the AFC North is the only team from the AFC North going to the playoffs, whether it's us or Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh, they had the gimme game on Thanksgiving night against the Colts without Andrew Luck. I still think their offense is obviously really, really good, even without all the different guys that are out right now. As a homer, I would still say that, we still win the division at 9-7. We have six wins now. But, it's definitely going to be a tough road. I mean, we have the last two home games, Miami and Philadelphia. Then we're away at Scott's Bengals, at the Steelers, and then we have a Monday night game at the Patriots. So that could be an ugly game for us because we flat out, as you guys know, we can't score points. So you know, hopefully defense shows up. I mean, Doomerville's finally back this week. You know, obviously had the sack and strip fumble. So hopefully he can continue to contribute. Suggs, again, beating Father Time for now. I mean, Suggs has been better this year, and way better this year than I thought he would, especially with a torn bicep. But as a Hoover pick, you know, I think we'll win the division. Realistically, I think we'll come up just short, but we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Well, thank you both for hopping on. Good luck going forward, guys.
All right, guys, have a good one.
All right, see ya.
All right, now we are joined by Giant superfan Sam, who's continued the misery in the city of Cleveland. They're still looking for their first win after a 27-13 loss that, man, they made Odell and Jason Pierre-Paul look like some world beaters out there today. How did you like the game, Sam?
You know, for the eighth time this season, the Giants won a game in which they seemingly had no interest in winning. The lack of offensive ingenuity of any sort is concerning. You know, it looks like these guys haven't played together yet. It's mostly just due to their talent that they're even winning. It's their coaching has coached exactly to the level of their talent. I think their talent's actually outperforming their coaching. But that being said, the defensive side of the ball is extremely solid. You know, we gave up 6 points last. There was a garbage time touchdown, but really shut everything down. That line is starting to take over again. Like you mentioned, JPP had a big game. Jonathan Hankins and Snacks Harrison have really closed up that middle to where offenses really can't run. I think Cleveland averaged less than 3 yards a carry last week, the same story. Moving to offense, you know, they're doing just enough to win. They usually have one good drive a game, one short field drive a game, and then one drive where Odell scores. And that's about 21 points, and that's what they usually take to win. So, mixed bag win for the Giants this week.
Well, I mean, a win's a win. How does that kind of set you guys up for the NFC East kind of sprint for the playoffs?
So right now, you know, we have the behemoth Dallas in our division, and they only have one loss. We're still two losses behind them. You know, it's kind of looking like we're just going to snag a wild card spot. Right now, they need to win two of their next 5 games. I see that happening at Lions and one of the Eagles or Redskins games. You know, winning those 2 games puts us at 10-6. I think that clinches a playoff spot. I think Dallas, I think they have a relatively easy schedule. I don't think they're going to be caught. I think the Redskins may grab the second wild card. We might have 3 NFC East teams. I think the Eagles are done. And, you know, I really don't see any of those NFC North or NFC South teams competing. And the NFC West is also a dumpster fire. So it looks like the Giants really just have to go 2-3 to get a playoff spot here on out.
Well, that's a very fortuitous position to be in. I mean, we'll get to this recap a little bit later. If the Saints keep playing the way that they are, they might challenge somebody for a wild card spot, but they dug themselves a pretty big hole, you know, out of the gate. As far as the Browns side, I mean, did you see anything that would make a Browns fan encouraged, or do you just see like the reincarnated, what was that, 2009 Detroit Lions?
The team has a lot of issues. That being said, they do have some really nice talent on that team. I think the receivers are good. I think Terrell Pryor is awesome. You know, it's hard to believe he was a quarterback a few years ago. He's a legit number one receiver. I think Coleman is going to be good. I think Crowell and Duke Johnson are good enough running backs in this league to complement that passing attack. I think they need a quarterback. On defense, again, they have players. You know, they have Collins, they have Kirksey. They have Joe Hayden. They have a couple of guys out there. It's just they don't have any depth, and that offensive line, the quarterback situation are really rough. That defensive line isn't very good either. Danny Shelton's a good player. it's going to take a little bit for these Browns to get good, but I think they have some good pieces at least. I don't know if that's really anything to really look forward to.
It's better than what a lot of teams have. I would imagine. You know, Rams specifically come to mind, but we'll get to that one later. Well, Sam, thank you very much for calling in. Good luck on your wild card contention, and who knows, maybe Dallas will completely collapse here in the last few weeks, and you guys can catch them.
Yeah, that would be nice, and good luck holding on to that division. It's looking scary for you guys up there.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you very much, and have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Now we are joined by Chris. Stomp the Rams 49-21. I think the biggest surprise from this game was that the Rams basically equaled their season touchdown total with three. Despite that, there were three quarterbacks that threw, or three players, I should say, that threw touchdown passes, two of them on the Saints. So, Chris, I have to ask, who would you rather have play quarterback, Willie Snead or Jared Goff?
You know, Goff made some strides today, but I'm going to go with Willie. You know, perfect completion percentage. He had a perfect completion percentage and a touchdown today, so I'm going to go with Willie Snead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then, of course, there's your primary quarterback, Drew Brees, who had the four passing touchdowns, the one rushing touchdown. As, you know, it's got to be nice to, for him at least, to be playing some meaningful football games and not just padding his stats.
No, you know, Jared Goff made a lot of he impressed me today in that first half. You know, the Saints came out hot. They blitzed heavy, and he was able to show some poise, stay in the pocket, and have some completions. Things went downhill for the Rams when they started to back off and disguise their coverage, so that's definitely something he needs to work on.
Okay. So what do you think the biggest takeaway from this game from the Saints side would be?
Oh, it's all about Greg Williams. This personal. You know, this was something that this was our a game to welcome him back, and it meant something. You know, Peyton was very animated on the sidelines, and when you're up by 21 in the fourth quarter, you typically don't run trick plays, but he ran it. You know, he had Snead with the pass to Hightower, so
yeah.
This meant a lot, and it felt good. It doesn't give back the Saints the 2011 season, but we'll take this one for now.
Well, excellent. Now, I know that this win was definitely a necessity if you guys want to be in contention for, a very outside shot for the division, more likely kind of competing for a wild card spot. How do your guys' playoff odds look after this game?
Well, I mean, as I said all season, Atlanta has to start losing for that to be a thing. I still don't see us making a wild card. A lot has to happen for that, but we're just going to take the win, be happy with today, and hope to pull one off against Detroit next week.
Excellent. Anything else to add from this game?
That's it, man. Who dat?
Well, excellent. Thanks for hopping on to recap the game. Congratulations on the win. And, man, hopefully you didn't use up all your touchdowns this week.
It's New Orleans. That's all we have.
All right. Well, you have a good evening, Chris.
Thanks, buddy.
Next up, we're joined by Andy, the Dolphins superfan, coming off a 31-24 victory over the San Francisco 49ers of Santa Clara. Andy, how are you doing today?
I am well. I am actually calling you right now from the corner of 33rd Street and 7th Avenue, Hooters NYC. Great establishment, very family-oriented establishment. Lots of wholesome things going on here.
Are you in somehow piggybacking off of the John Gruden getting paid to promote Hooters there?
No, I'm not. Actually, I was paid $10. Gruden was paid $10,000 to do that. But it is a plug. A plug is a plug, right?
Yeah, and money is money, right? So, you know,
exactly.
It's still
just
$10 more than what you had
lawn.
Before.
Absolutely.
There you go. So what can you tell me about the Dolphins-Niners game?
So, first thing I'd like to say is, you know, this Dolphin team, this is different from a Joe Philbin team. Adam Gase, regardless of what happens at the end of the year, should have serious consideration for Coach of the Year. That's how good a job he's done. I mean, listen, we didn't dominate. The Niners probably outgained us. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but from a total yardage perspective, they probably outgained us by 100 to 120. Kaepernick actually had an incredible, incredible game. Threw for almost 300, three touchdowns. Rushed for another 80. He was a handful. It was 2012, 2013 all over again. The Dolphins won this game basically because we made Kaepernick into a passer, bottled up Carlos Hyde for the most part, and I mean, listen, you know, this game probably could have been a little more one-sided. If you actually look at the film, you'll see that Devontae Parker had a touchdown called back. He also had a 50-yard catch called back. A lot of things went against us. Game definitely closer than it should have been. But we prevailed, and it's on to Baltimore at this point.
Yeah, on to Baltimore. And I believe this is putting you guys into the second wild card spot with this win, isn't it?
Yes, if the season were to end at this very juncture, we would be the sixth seed, the second wild card. And, again, really a testament to Adam Gase, Vance Joseph, and what they've been able to do with this organization. I remember not that long ago, seemingly, we were 1-4 coming off a loss to the Titans at home, and I wanted us to tank. Well, six straight wins, we're 7-4 now. If we beat the Ravens in Baltimore next week, it will be the first time since 1984 that we've won seven in a row. 1984, as we all remember, was Dan Marino's second year in the NFL, 48 touchdown passes at age 23. We went to the Super Bowl. That's how that year ended. Getting stomped, obviously, by Montana. It's an incredible time. It's really an incredible time. And at this point, for us to finish, you know, worse than 10-6 would be a letdown.
Okay, so if you're saying less than 10-6 is a letdown, then you're pretty much predicting that you are going to hold on for one of those wild card spots.
Not necessarily, because the AFC West has a bunch of very strong teams who all could finish 10-6, 11-5, or better. To be honest, I'm not sure exactly who I'm rooting for between the Chiefs and the Broncos, but, I mean, the Raiders had a chance to lose against Carolina today. It doesn't look like they'll do that, so that doesn't help the Dolphins very much either. I mean, we'll see. There's a very real possibility the Dolphins finish 10-6 and don't make the playoffs, and that's kind of what I'm afraid of. But even if that happens, I mean, to go 10-6 in a season where a lot of people, including myself, were picking us to go 6-10, 5-11, really amazing.
All right. Well, I think you and Monty can form that support group on who to cheer for in tonight's game. But in the meantime,
yeah,
Thanks for dialing in. Any other closing thoughts?
Closing thought, hot take, Ryan Tannehill still is not a franchise quarterback, and I'm still not sold.
All right. Well, with Jay Ajayi bailing him out, it's going to make him look a lot better, come season's end, and a lot harder to make it look a lot harder to replace him, unfortunately.
Yep, that's the plan, and we'll see what happens in the NFL draft.
All right. Well, you go back to your fine family dining, and thanks for the recap.
Later, bro.
And here we are with our San Francisco 49ers superfan, Charlie. A game that may have reminded you of a certain Super Bowl a few years back, opening up some old scars with the 49ers stopped on the doorstep. What did you see today? How was watching the game for you?
Well, first off, thank you for reminding me of that. Realistically, I was very, very excited to see the team continue to fight. They were down 14 points. I figured it was going to be time for them to pack it in. You know, Jay Ajayi was going to start, closing the fourth quarter out for the Dolphins. And the Niner defense continued to step up, renewed run defense behind Ken Dorsey, the defensive tackle, Glenn Dorsey, I should say, the defensive tackle came back and finally given the Niners a stout run defense without Navarro Bowman and Eric Armstead. So, very, very excited to see the team continue to fight. It came down to a last second, missed opportunity by Kaepernick. Really, if you're going to lose a game and get the second overall pick, like I really hope the Niners do, this is the way I want it to happen. I don't want us to get blown out. I want us to have wins that make us look good, or losses that make us look good, I should say, and, the quote-unquote moral victory that makes us, look like we're not just quitting on our defensive coordinator and our head coach. We actually look like we might have a culture to build upon once we get some better talented players.
Yeah, let's talk about the offensive side of the ball first. Looking at Colin Kaepernick's stat line, threw for 300 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. He added 10 runs for 113 yards. How did he play today? Do those stats say how good he was? Were those garbage time stats? What's your evaluation of Collins today?
Considering it was a 7-point game that was decided, you know, within 5 seconds left in the game, no, those were not garbage time stats. But like I was saying the past couple weeks, this resurgence, Niner fans do not need to get suckered in by this. This is Colin Kaepernick back in the Jim Harbaugh type of scenario where he's only getting half-field read. He is taking one read, you know, looking for a stick concept or corners or levels. And if it's not there, he's running. He's not going from wide receiver one to two to three to check down. He is, if it's not there, he's running. And that is not a sustainable offense in the NFL. So once people figure him out, which typically happens in the second half, he just falls off a cliff. This game, that didn't happen. So does that give him something to build upon? Yes, but it's still just one read. And if the read's not there, he's running. That's why he went over 100 yards rushing and was the Niners' leading rusher for the second straight.
Yeah, and his targets, though, not a lot of names most people will recognize on that list. Are any of these guys keepers for years that come, or is this going to need to be totally rebuilt from the ground up?
You know, from the pass-catching side, no. I think Vance McDonald, the tight end, who has really taken 3 years to actually finally blossom, he's going to be a guy who's going to get a long-term contract. Jeremy Curley, who the Niners brought over from the Lions just after training camp, he's going to stick with the team. Torrey Smith is a decent wide receiver. With as long as we can get someone coupled with Torrey Smith, you know, to make him not the only focus of our offense, I think we can be good. I think we're only one wide receiver away from a decent wide receiving core. But first and foremost, I think we got to fix the quarterback position. So looking into the draft, I want to go no smiles for Miles, you know, Miles Garrett, the defensive end. And then I want to look at like a Luke Falk in the second or third round. We'll keep Cap around for a stopgap for next year. But there's nothing that Kaepernick has shown me that he has turned the corner and now is all of a sudden going to be great. Unless you look at his stat lines and you don't actually watch the game, you're going to think Kaepernick is turned around and now all of a sudden he's resurgent. You know, he's not. He's just getting one read, and it's all based off of Kelly's schemes. Now, one thing I must say, everyone who's listened to me on the podcast, I've been touting from the rooftops that Colin Kaepernick was the worst fit for Chip Kelly's offense and that Blaine Gabbert was clearly better. I'm going to have to eat those words. Kaepernick is way better in this offense.
Yeah, I don't think anybody that has said Blaine Gabbert is the better quarterback has really stood by those words for any real long amount of time. Let's move to the other side of the ball. You know, this isn't a team that's going to win this year or next year. Who are, you know, you mentioned Glenn Dorsey. Who are the other players you'd like to see moving forward, players you think have some future with this team?
Although the Niners got passed on a lot this game with Eric Reed out for the year, their starting free safety. I really thought Rashard Robinson played fantastic. He's the Niners' fourth-round pick that they picked up right before Dak Prescott. Let me tell you, I'd rather have Dak, but Rashard Robinson played very well there at right corner. Then stepping up for Navarro Bowman being gone, I thought Nick Ballore as well as Gerald Hodges played really well. I know those are names you've never heard of, and next year once Bowman's back, they'll be back on special teams or off the team, but still I thought they showed a lot of heart today.
How has DeForest Buckner been playing? He was a player I really liked before the draft. How's he looked?
You know, now that there isn't two of the exact same guy on the 49ers defensive line with Eric Armstead, the prior first-round pick, I think it looks a lot better. So you have a clear five technique, someone who's going to be able to rush the passer along with a two-gapping nose tackle and a block-eating right defensive end. Now the DeForest Buckner is actually penetrating on run plays. He's doing better. He's not playing so high. Because when it was Arik Armstead and DeForest Buckner, that's really two of the same guy that's just penetrating gaps and not able to sit down and take on the double team and create a pile there at the point of attack. These guys are just getting driven off the ball. And so I think, you know, we really had addition by subtraction by only having one of the two. Now that really calls into question Trent Baalke for drafting two of the exact same player in consecutive drafts in the first round. So I really hope Trent Baalke's gone. Bring on Tom Gamble, who was a big personnel guy under Howie Roseman there in Philly, but was clearly a Chip guy. And the year before Chip Kelly was fired, Roseman fired Gamble. Gamble was hired with the 49ers in this last offseason. You know, when Chip was brought on, got put in as a assistant GM. So I could see Gamble coming in for Baalke. And then once Arik Armstead and DeForest Buckner are back, I would like us to switch to a 4-3. I think those guys playing on the outside would be phenomenal. DeForest Buckner just looks lost inside, you know. So if he was an actual true defensive end in a 4-3, I think he'd be a much better player.
Yeah, you know, you can't hire Chip Kelly and not draft the Oregon guy. I think that was part of the package.
Yeah. If so, and you know, we don't have the, you know, constructive criticism or the ability to share thoughts and make decisions as an organization in a draft room, then it's time to cut off the head, and the head of a draft room is your general manager.
Yeah, how do you and the San Francisco 49er fan base in general feel about Chip Kelly? He was in the NFC East last few years. I wasn't too terribly impressed with him towards the end of his reign at Philly. What's the news coming out of San Francisco about him?
So, you know how you mentioned, you know, it really doesn't seem like we have a lot of pass catchers there in San Francisco. You're right. He is making guys like Vance McDonald look good. He's making guys like Jeremy Curley, who was never going to play for Detroit until we traded for him, look good, you know. And so he has guys just not NFL wide open, but college wide open, and it's because of his scheme. The scheme can work. And, you know, Kelly, has he learned? I think he has. Could you imagine him 2 years ago, right after the Riley Cooper thing, doing what he's doing for Colin Kaepernick and his stand against oppression? Could you imagine that happening in Philadelphia 2 years ago? I sure couldn't. I think Chip Kelly has learned that emotional intelligence that got him fired in Philadelphia. And honestly, I can't fault Chip Kelly for this 1-10 season. We left him with nothing. It's going to be great to see Kelly get a GM who he supports and he has confidence in, and Tom Gamble. Let him have a draft. Let him, you know, take a flyer on a third-round quarterback, and then next year the quarterback cupboards are going to be very full for the 2018 draft. So looking forward for that. We always knew this was going to be a two-year plan. There's no way anyone, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, no one could have came in and made this 49er roster relevant.
Yeah, well, we all wish you luck at losing 15 straight and hopefully getting that one or two pick.
No smiles for Miles.
Yeah, digging a ditch for Mitch, UNC quarterback. We'll see what happens. Good luck, and by that I mean, I guess you also hope that you lose the rest of the games from here on out in a very competitive way.
Yes, sir.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Bills versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, a game which actually turned out to be a really good game. In the end, the Buffalo Bills pull out a 28-21 victory. It was a very back-and-forth affair, though. Jaguars scored first. Buffalo came back to score six in the second quarter. They were down a point at the half. And then they just kind of battled back and forth through the third and fourth quarter. This was a game that was really highlighted by some big plays and some blown plays. If you just look at the stat lines, Blake Bortles and Tyrod Taylor don't look like they had great games. Bortles went for 126 yards. Tyrod Taylor went for 166 yards. again, these are the quarterbacks. These aren't running backs. Those are not terrific passing numbers. But Tyrod Taylor was really efficient. You know, his running ability really shined through. He had one really nice touchdown run. He did throw for a score as well. The thing that surprises me really with the Jacksonville Jaguars is just how undisciplined their defense can be sometimes, though. Early in the game, LeSean McCoy set a career long with a 75-yard touchdown run. LeSean McCoy is a good player and has been for a long time. He had his longest run ever this game. That's kind of nuts. And the reason why it happened is it was a fairly routine interior run, but rather than having one guy do with the outside contain, one guy going inside, they had two players basically trying to do an outside contain, and then nobody in front of him. And with his speed, you know, he makes one cut and he goes. A team coached by Gus Bradley, you know, former Seahawks defensive coordinator, I really expect so much more out of their defense. It's been the big disappointment for me in his entire tenure there. In addition, on the play that Tyrod Taylor threw for a touchdown, it was honestly probably not the best throw to make. There was a safety there who was kind of lurking, right, ready to come up and make a hit. But instead of actually making the hit, he kind of takes a sort of a stutter step back pedal and ends up leaving a ton of space to make the catch. Almost any other team, they make that hit, and either you blow up the wide receiver or you get the interception. So the Bills kind of looked out there, and that's just more undisciplined defense, which just baffles me, just drives me nuts. They've invested a lot of draft capital in that side of the ball, and the fact that they haven't figured that out just drives me bonkers. The other story of the game, though, was this was the return of Sammy Watkins, you know, a first-round pick from a couple years ago who's had some injury issues. But he was great. He had three receptions for 80 yards, including one really, really long one up the right sideline. So, you know, if he's back, Buffalo's got a chance to actually do some good stuff. You know, they're having a pretty solid season overall. Obviously, they're not going to catch the Patriots, but this could be something for them to really build on. On the other side, the Jaguars, man, I thought they were going to be a good team this year. I really did. I was really hoping for them. Now at 2-9, as about as big a Gus Bradley fan as you're going to find. I can't come up with any excuse to keep him around. I don't see any reason to keep him back. The offense has regressed. The Allens are playing worse. Blake Bortles is a shell of what he was last year. Not a lot of upside in Jacksonville right now. I think they really need some fresh perspective and probably a whole new coaching staff, unfortunately, for them.
All right, everybody. I'm here with James, our Houston Texans super fan. What is happening, James?
Oh, you know, same stuff, different day. Yourself?
Today's a little different from most weeks for me. Feels bad. But anyway, let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. Final score, Chargers 21, Houston Texans 13. Why don't you just kind of walk us through what happened in this game, James?
Well, you know, our offensive line just got dominated, especially in the second half. You know, we made Joey Bosa look like the holdout candidate that deserved a bigger contract that, you know, he may turn into, but, you know, being a Big Ten guy, it was very painful for me to watch an Ohio State guy succeed. So Brock did a surprisingly good job in the first half. You know, there was the one interception in the first half, which, yeah, that's kind of par for the course for Brock. He had three on the game, which is a little misleading because one of them was on the final Hail Mary. All in all, the first half, you know, if he could just play like that, you know, in all the games, that is what I would come to expect. And, you know, I don't want to say cherish, but we'll go with tolerate. Yeah, that's a good word, tolerate. Biggest turnover of the game for the Texans was actually on Lamar Miller. He sprung a big run early in the third quarter. It would have set up the Texans either just outside the San Diego red zone or possibly right inside it. And that would have been a great opportunity to tie the game at that point. Went to review. It was pretty clearly a fumble, so you get too upset about that. And then as far as Houston's defense goes, that was one of the things that actually let us down. The front four could not get pressure by themselves, or at least not consistent pressure. And so Romeo Crennel kept creeping people up to help out and, you know, try and get some pressure on Phillip Rivers. Because anytime we got pressure on him, you know, just like a lot of quarterbacks, you know, he was making some bad throws and, you know, just looked generally flustered in the pocket. However, after we kept moving coverage further and further up, Quentin Demps bit on a double move by, I believe that was Dontrell Inman. And when you're the last guy back, you really shouldn't bite on a double move. And so that led to the, I believe, eventual game-winning points. It was encouraging to see us and Bill O'Brien actually do the smart thing. We had about 30 seconds left in the game, down by 10. I'm sorry, down by 11. So obviously you need the two scores. Normally I'm on the camp where I like to see, you know, take a couple shots at the end zone. Houston was right around the 25-yard line. And with 30 seconds left, that's kind of where the math flips. And so I was glad to see them actually trot out Nick Novak. He managed to get the field goal. We recovered the onside kick. Brock got two shots at the end zone, which when you're playing the San Diego Chargers, that is the best time to have the ball down late, because this year they've done quite a good job of losing in just gut-wrenching fashions. Unfortunately, it was not meant to be today, and now we're looking forward to you know, just barely maintaining a lead in the division.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it. One of the things that stood out to me, I'm just kind of going over this game, was the lack of defensive players jumping off the stat sheet for you guys. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney had a pretty quiet day. I mean, Whitney Mercilus had a pretty good day, you know, put some hits on the quarterback, had some tackles for loss. You know, Jadeveon Clowney, who, in my opinion at least, has been playing at a Pro Bowl level for the season, no sacks, no hits on the quarterback, just two tackles. It really seemed like there was a big struggle getting home against that. Honestly, kind of lousy San Diego offensive line. What was going on there?
Well, I mean, with that, San Diego basically gave Clowney the J.J. Watt treatment and said, you know what, he's not going to beat us. He's their best, or, you know, Clowney is the best defensive player right now. So they always had a little bit of extra help. They would either keep the running back in to chip him, or they did a lot of, you know, Phillip Rivers isn't exactly the most mobile quarterback, but there were a couple times where, you know, they just got him moving outside the pocket just a little bit and away from Clowney. And it's a little unsettling that we were able, or that, you know, a player of his caliber, the way he's been playing so far, was able to be taken out of a with such a simple scheme, such a simple game plan.
Now, one player that I did want to make sure to highlight, though, was DeAndre Hopkins. It looked like they managed to incorporate him a little bit more, kind of got him going. He's had a pretty quiet year, but he had 70 yards on 5 catches. Is he starting to develop some chemistry with Brock Osweiler from what you see?
It would appear so. It also looks like, you know, Will Fuller has kind of come back. He had a couple good catches this game. And now that we've got an established deep threat that Brock's able to hit, or at least, you know, get near in the area of, you know, force the defense to play, it's opened up a little bit for Hopkins. We can clip this next part and just play it every week. Hopkins made a nice circus catch. In this case, it happened to be on the first drive of the game for his first catch. It's always fun to see those, and then you kind of shake your head and realize how he's kind of wasting it, and you just have, or at least I have, flashbacks of how Andre Johnson just kind of spent his career toiling away for no glory.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the San Diego Chargers. Specifically, here's a player I will freely admit I have never heard of, Dontrell Inman. 119 yards receiving and a touchdown. He accounted for almost exactly one half of Phillip Rivers' yards this game. Who is he, and what was he doing that made him so successful?
Well, like I said, I mean, the big play, if I remember correctly, is where he got Quentin Demps to bite on a double move. And, you know, that was a huge gain. That probably accounted for at least half his yards on the day. You know, the Chargers always seem to find one kind of oddball wide receiver. I remember Inman being on their squad, I believe, last year, maybe even the year before as well. Outside of that, can't tell you much of his history. Very fast. It looked like, he has a promising career as a maybe a number two wide receiver. With the Houston pass rush just not getting home, and you know, our secondary is aging. It's not exactly murderer's row back there. Unlike say the Seahawks, you know, unless we can get that front pressure, we're going to get burnt deep by players like Inman, unfortunately.
Now, despite the loss at 6-5, the Houston Texans are still in first place, still kind of in the driver's seat, in a let's be honest, a fairly mediocre AFC South. Doesn't look like you're going to get much of a challenge from the Colts. The Jaguars are an embarrassment, if we're going to be very generous to them. But the Titans seem to be coming on pretty strong. What's your schedule look like down the stretch, and how do you see your chances are of taking the division crown this year?
Earlier today, when I was chatting with Chicago Tom, I kind of brought this up as well. I mean, you told me the division winner went 8-8 in the AFC South, I'd feel great that that was the Houston Texans. If you told me that the division winner was going to have to win 9 games, I'd feel a little bit more iffy on the Texans. Since talking to him, though, I looked at it a little bit more. You know, inside the division, we still have 3 divisional games. So we obviously play the Colts, Jags, and Titans one more time each. So I really like the fact that we're already 3-0 in the division. Titans already have 3 losses inside the division. And so as long as we can win one more of our division games, which thank you, Jacksonville Jaguars. I really appreciate you contributing to the division at a Cleveland Browns pace. We're going to own basically any tiebreaker over the Titans, having already won 1 game over them. You know, we get to go up to Green Bay next week, where, you know, a couple weeks ago, I had already written that off as a loss. But with them coming off the short week, you know, having to play Monday night tomorrow, and frankly, just not looking super great, especially at home, you know, now I at least give our team about a 50-50 shot of winning that game. We get to play the Bengals later this year at home. So Houston's always kind of had Cincinnati's number, looking forward to that game. So there's 2 games to get us up to the 8 wins, and then the Jags would put us at 9. That would force the Tennessee Titans, who oddly enough haven't even had their bye week yet. That's coming up here. That's going to force them in the final 4 games. Yeah, 4 games left on their schedule to go, you know, 4-0 in order to take the division. 3-1 to at least get it to a tiebreaker.
It sounds like you got a pretty favorable situation down the stretch. And then hopefully, you know, without a Hoyer on the team, maybe a better shot in the playoffs, should you make it. Well, with that, James, I'm gonna let you go. Appreciate you taking the time. Good luck in your upcoming games.
Good luck to you as well. I think your path to the playoffs is a little bit better defined than mine.
Yeah, at least we've laid the groundwork outside of today's game, which I'm just going to abstain from mentioning at any point in the podcast today whatsoever.
All right, James. Well, you have a good evening.
You too.
And now we're with the Seattle Seahawks fan, Justin, coming off a game with, I think, the weirdest score of the day. The Bucks won 14-5. Justin, what happened in this game? How'd you end up with 5 points? Walk us through it.
Man, I'll be honest. We were lucky to get up to 5. It was a terrible game. I mean, not a lot of silver linings to this one. Usually, even in the loss, you know, I'll point to players who played well, things that look like, you know, we can build on that. Nothing good came out of this game, man. I mean, there's nothing. I guess nobody got hurt, from what I could tell. So we got that going for us. The rest of my division sucks. So there's that. But, I mean, bad game. Bad game all around. I mean, where to begin on this one?
Let's start with the offense. The Bucks, a team that have given up a ton of points in previous games. Seahawks offense looked like it was trending in the right direction. What happened on this side of the ball?
Well, if you look at the games that we lost, especially early in the season, or almost lost, it had kind of the same thing in common. A good defensive line dominating the Seahawks offensive line. You know, this scoring binge has kind of coincided with some lesser defensive fronts and some improved play from the Seahawks offensive line. But Justin Britt, who is at this point the only, I think, positively graded offensive lineman by Pro Football Focus on the team, was out with an injury. So we had rookie Hunt in, And that was a disaster. None of this offensive line could possibly handle Gerald McCoy, who was wreaking havoc all day long. And then it looked exactly like that first game against Miami or the game against the Rams, where Russell's running for his life. He has no time to throw. And then he starts having to step up in the pocket early. The timing is off, so he either has to evade pressure, then throw, so the receivers are out of their window, or he's got to get rid of it immediately, or he's getting sacked. This is the most he's been sacked all year, and if you look at some of the early games, that's a scary statistic. Hopefully Justin Britt is back soon, and that'll help a ton, but, I mean, offensively, you know, it's really that offensive line. And if you look at, like, the explosive plays that have really been the hallmark of the team lately, a lot of those came out of empty sets, play action, both of which you need a working offensive line. You can't do play action with just slow developing if the quarterback's getting hit immediately. And you can't do an empty set if you need running backs in as extra blockers. So there were no explosive plays whatsoever. The biggest play of the day was a deep pass interference. And then, yeah, on top of that, you know, Russell starts having to kind of do too much, even for him. So he has a couple of interceptions, which is so very rare for him. And, you know, Thomas Rawls can't get going at all. He ran hard, but, you know, he was getting hit behind the line of scrimmage. You don't score any points that way. The offense scored 3 points today against something like the 26th ranked defense in the league. So, yeah, that's what happened on offense.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, but it does seem that the Seahawks, if you don't have a dominant defensive line, the Seahawks will take advantage of you. Which, you know, in the NFC, it's really just the Giants that have that defensive line. So it looks like you may be okay there. Let's switch to the other side of the ball. On defense, you guys gave up two early touchdowns and then kind of shut them down the rest of the game. I know you're missing some key players. So what happened on that side of the ball? How are you guys able to recover from two straight scoring drives?
Luck, mostly, if I'm being perfectly honest. I mean, look, they scored two touchdowns right away, and they moved the ball pretty much throughout the day. I think there was maybe one three and out all day. What ended up happening, though, was, you know, the rookie Aguayo, who they took in the second round, who I've been pretty critical of, who's played well lately, by the way, to his credit, misses a very makeable field goal near the end of the first half. Then, you know, there's a fumble later in the game. And, you know, they keep, you know, when they did have to punt, they were able to get kind of into Seahawks territory. So they moved the ball very effectively. And I'll tell you what happened. Earl Thomas was out. That's everything. That to me, that's like the defensive equivalent of when the Colts lost Andrew Luck this past week. He is everything to that defense. And you can see it all over the place. You know, his replacement for this game, Stephen Terrell, did the best he could, but that first touchdown to Mike Evans, he was coming over the middle of the end zone, and he had a cushion, and he didn't have the reaction or the speed of Earl Thomas to blow him up. Later in the game, you see some throws on the sideline, same thing. You see, you know, when the tackle is made, you finally see the safety kind of near the play. And these are plays where Earl Thomas is usually the first one in on the action because of his speed and because of his recognition. So having this defense without Earl Thomas is not a fraction of what it normally is. Michael Bennett is still out, but the team's worked around that. But that was the other big issue is, as good as the Buccaneers were at getting to the quarterback, the Seahawks couldn't at all. Frank Clark, who has had a great year, I think came the closest. I don't know if he maybe had a sack, but he got a little bit of pressure. Cliff Averill, who at least going into this week was cited for the league lead in sacks, really didn't get much pressure in there. So, you know, they won it on both sides that way. And then, you know, Jameis Winston, I have to give credit to him. He played a good game. And Mike Evans, you know, all 6'5" of him, you know, was able to kind of match up to the physicality of Richard Sherman. And honestly, I like the way that the refs handled that. They let them be physical. I would rather see my team lose in games where they let the wide receiver in the corners play a little bit. But on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, the score honestly looks closer than it was because they were moving around pretty much at will.
Yeah, well, looking forward, you guys play in a dumpster fire of a division. You're three games up on your next closest team there with the Cardinals at 4-6-1. The rest of your schedule looks pretty easy. You got the Panthers, Packers, and then you finish up with intra-division games. You think you guys end up in second? You think you guys end up in second with the bye, or you think you guys end up dropping below the Falcons? What do you think happens looking forward to the rest of the season?
I think based on the schedules that we're still probably the favorite for the number two seed. I think that after this week, you know, that outside shot of a number one seed is a pipe dream. I mean, I think Dallas will probably win. Maybe we'll probably lose maybe one more game this year, but they're not going to lose several. And the Seahawks could run the table, could win, what is it, five games left, maybe four of the last five or what have you. So I think there's still a good shot at a number two seed. But next week is going to be tough. I mean, you've got the Panthers, who have been very unimpressive. But again, the defense is going to be without Earl Thomas, I'm sure, which is huge. That's such a big loss. So I still like our chances, especially if we get everybody back healthy for the playoffs. I still like our chances all the way through, but at least this week and next week, man, bummer city.
Yeah, I mean, what would we do without a late Seahawks push through the NFC playoffs? Well, we wish you luck, Justin, and we hope to see Russell Wilson have some time back there because he is one of the best quarterbacks to watch in the game. All right, good luck the rest of the season.
All right, thank you. All right, guys, this is Justin, your Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Monty, our Oakland Raiders superfan, and my buddy Sam is going to stick around and help us kind of cover the Carolina Panthers side of it. First off, hey, Monty, how are you feeling right now?
I have been yelling, and I'm sick, so you can hear it in my voice. It was a close game.
We admire your courage and bravery to overcome in that situation. So real quick, there was a really hard-fought, really close win by your Raiders. That was at one point, it looked like you guys were absolutely running away with it. Then the Panthers came back. At one point, you lost Derek Carr for a while. What happened when you lost him? What was going through your mind?
He dislocated his finger on a snap. Ended up being a fumble where the Panthers had a short field and ran it in. First thought was obviously, please don't be broken and miss additional time. McGloin came in for a series, went three and out, almost turned it over. Basically, the Raiders took off the third quarter when Carr went out, and then it took him a series to kind of get back into the game. But yeah, first thing I was thinking is, you know, the Raiders had played excellent in the first half. There was like business as usual. And then, you know, is this going to be the first time the Raiders have a winning season since 2002? And then Derek Carr dislocates his finger up the center's keister and all sorts of panic.
Yeah, I didn't want to go into too much detail, but that was an interesting way to fumble the ball, that's for sure. So, Sam, let me throw it back to you. So, you know, going into the second half, Carolina was getting absolutely destroyed. Then they scored 18 unanswered points in the third quarter, added another touchdown in the fourth quarter. What did they start doing that you saw that got them back in this ball game?
Honestly, when I watched the game, it didn't seem like much change. They had one huge play to Ted Ginn where Cam Newton just did his Cam Newton thing, threw a perfect pass, and it was like a 70-ish yard touchdown. And then Derek Carr went out. McGloin didn't do much, left them really. I think the Raiders were a little deflated there until they saw Derek Carr come back. And then when he came, I'm not sure when he threw this interception, but he threw that interception to Thomas Davis. He tracked him across the middle. He threw it right into his arms that led to a short field. So I don't think the Raiders necessarily played worse. It was kind of a few plays swinging the game, but it was nice to see the Raiders come back. Weird not being able to finish games and turning the ball over at the end of the games, throwing pick sixes. Something seems off there from last year. I haven't been watching them enough to know. I think it might be with their offensive line because their weapons seem all the same. Just something seems off with this Panthers team.
Definitely the offensive line. They are down to like their third string center. What did you think about the Panthers deciding to punt it there with about 6 minutes left? They threw a little out to Kelvin Benjamin. He was about a foot short, and they decided to punt the ball back to the Raiders and let them drive down. I mean, if you're going to be Riverboat Ron, isn't that the time to go for it? Your team doesn't, you know, you've got a losing record. You got to send a statement. I was totally shocked they decided to punt.
Yeah, I mean, with Cam Newton, it's kind of hard not to gain, you know, that yard or a little less than a yard. I don't think with that defense, especially without Kuechly, they had any dreams that they were going to stop Carr once they saw he was rolling. It goes on questionable coaching. I think coaches sometimes outthink themselves, but I had no reason to believe that the Panthers would stop the Raiders at any point today if Carr was, 95% of health-wise. Once we saw that finger that he was able to get that zip on those throws, I had no doubt in my mind that the Raiders were going to come down and score.
Well, I'm obviously biased on meds, and I've been drinking in order to have this call, but I think Derek Carr made his case to be in the conversation, if not the front runner for the league MVP this weekend. Am I crazy, or do you think he should be in there?
I think he's in the conversation. I don't think you're totally crazy about that, but here's something that I want to ask you about, something that's kind of been bugging me. Latavius Murray, why do I feel like he never gets any carries?
They like to spread it around. They got those two rookies, the quote-unquote change of pace guys. And I think in a perfect world, they would have each of those guys with 10 touches a game.
Yeah, I think that Raiders team, if everybody stays healthy, I think they have the most weapons out of any team. When you look at those tall tight ends, especially in the red zone where Carr can literally put it on a dime, those tall guys are great. Crabtree and Cooper on the outside, Seth Roberts making plays. You have those three running backs. I don't see how you really stop this Oakland team. If I'm New England and I'm looking at this Oakland team and I can't generate a pass rush, Derek Carr is going to carve them up five ways till Sunday.
And you mentioned the big play from Ted Ginn. The Raiders were without their best defensive back, David Amerson, today, and that showed up on pretty much every big play that the Panthers had. DJ Hayden would get flagged because he had to play number two cornerback instead of his usual slot position. The Ted Ginn play, TJ Carey got smoked. That would have been one of the other defensive backs. Sean Smith came back from injury, but without David Amerson, this defense, which is currently ranked 27th, is definitely the 32nd. But if he can come back and play, especially down the stretch run, I think this defense will play more towards the middle of the pack. And the way the offensive line and Derek Carr are playing, I mean, I think it's time to start to believe, Justin. It's time to get on board.
Yeah, you know what? That was going to be my next question for you. I thought that, this defense started the season really, really slow, especially Khalil Mack, who you may recall I was pretty critical of through the preseason and in the early part of the season. But they seem to be kind of turning things around. It may not look like it when you give up 32 to the Carolina Panthers. But just like you mentioned, a couple of short fields and one kind of blown coverage makes a big difference there. So what's changed for this defense?
They're just inconsistent. So at the beginning of the year, they had a lot more like blown plays than consistent plays. Now they're kind of give up two or three big explosive plays a game. Other than that, I mean, they've got, since that Denver game, they have been doing three and out, and then a big play where they'll give up a 50-yarder and then turn into points. Three and out, turnover, three and out. I mean, they're playing better, but they're still suspect to the big play. If they could just kind of get that under control, I think they got a chance. And then everyone remembers the penalties that they had down in Tampa. Today they only had 7 penalties, and I mean, I say only just because it's the Raiders. They lead the league in penalties, but if they can control their penalties and then get a handle on some of these big plays, I think this defense will be a lot better middle of the road than it has been thus far as they get a little more consistency with all these new pieces that they added.
Now, speaking of defense, the Carolina Panthers these last several years were really buoyed by a strong defense, and that seems to completely crumbled away. What were you seeing out of the Carolina Panthers defense today?
I don't know if it was the Carolina Panthers defense or the Oakland offensive line, but Carr seemed like he had enough time back there to make all the throws he needed to make. I think losing Luke Kuechly is big. Him and Thomas Davis, kind of like what we were saying with Earl Thomas, he just takes up so much real estate on the field, Kuechly, that when he's gone, all those other guys are now looking at places where they usually see Kuechly, and he's not there now. I think losing Josh Norman hurts them when they play these big physical receivers. Crabtree got open downfield over Kurt Coleman. I just think, these marginal losses on a not very deep team will add up once you start adding injuries and fatigue and, general desperation. And I think it's all catching up to them. Last year, everything went right. This year, you know, some cracks have formed, and we're starting to see those cracks turn into, like, real big issues for this team. So see what they do in the offseason, but they got to get deeper. I think it's been their problem for the past few years. It's once any of those guys gets injured or tired or stops playing, well, it's a massive decline with these Panthers.
All right, then let's finish up with you real quick, Monty. You guys, after this win, move on to 9-2. What's that mean for your playoff seeding? Where are you guys right now?
I think we're still in the middle of it. I mean, playoff seeding, we're tied for the one seed. We might have an edge based on conference records, but we still have a game against Denver and a game against the Chiefs. So that's really going to be the deciding factor of whether or not we are making a run at the division or if we're just settling for a wild card position. We got the Bills at home next week, and then we got a big game in Arrowhead on Thursday Night Football in week 14. And if the Raiders can win that game, I think they are in the driver's seat to win this division. And then we can start talking about, you know, a couple home playoff games in the O.co. And we'll see where this team can go here. As long as Derek Carr is playing at this level and he can avoid getting injured, whether it be from his center's butt or from somebody taking a shot at him, he can stay on the field. I think this team can compete with anyone.
Well, there we have it, guys. A huge win for the Raiders, a near comeback for the Panthers. A great assist on that from Sam. Thank you so much. And a gritty, borderline heroic performance from Monty, our Raiders superfan. Gentlemen, thank you both so much. I will catch you guys next week.
Yeah, bud.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for another busy day on the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to all the super fans for contributing. Thank you to our sponsor, BetDSI. Thank you to you guys for listening. Remember, you can always find us on our email. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter. That's @NFUpodcast. Check out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. A couple other quick thoughts, guys. Football was awesome this week, even though my team lost. I can't wait till next week. Hope everybody's enjoying the season so far. I'm going to give myself a big pat on the back for increasing my lead in the pigskin pick'em. I think my lead is sitting at 4 or 5 right now, but I do have Monty nipping at my heels and our good buddy, friend of the show, Jared. Speaking of friends of the show, I had an opportunity to go to a big Seahawks party with a big Seahawks fan group, Home of the 12s. So a big shout out to them. Everybody out there, if you're a fan of your team, please get involved with their group. If you like our show, feel free to share our show there, let people know about us. And in some cases, we're still looking for some super fans, like for the Titans, the Buccaneers. So if you know some fans of those teams, please send them our way. Again, that's nextfanup@gmail.com. We would love to get those positions filled so that we can rep those teams the way that they deserve. On that note, hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I'm going to send it over to Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.